And in then I saw two flashing red orange light eyes coming, just picking its way down the ridge, just between the rocks and around them and everything, and come down and was on the this big boulder, big flat rock, and then he kind of looked up at me, and he moved his hand in this through the fire cinders and kind of scattered them.
And the eyes of this other creature, like the robot, what did that look like to you?
And it had kind of like fire, kind of a orangish, reddish orange, or yellowish orange, and it kind of flickered like fire. And they're about the same diameter as about 2 inches in diameter as the humanoids.
Okay, so this second creature or entity that appeared, unlike the first one, which seemed to be Mr. Shrum's preliminary impression of the humanoid figures, were there, they weren't any threat to him. That was the impression that he got. But the second figure seemed more menacing, more threatening. There was just something about them, the way they approached the tree in which Mr. Shrum was located and so forth, that seemed menacing to him. And what happened next is rather amazing. This second of being, this mechanical-looking man, came to the base of the tree in which Mr. Shrum was. Then it, using one of its hands, it touched the bottom part of its head, and a vapor, a white vapor, suddenly came out of its head and up into the tree, causing Mr. Shrum to go unconscious for a short while, as we hear in this next segment.
Then he came down up on the rock. He was about 7 feet from me. And then he touched his mouth, and the kind of a steam vapor come out of his mouth, and it lit up his face so I could see some detail. And then I blacked out when that steam hit me, or I guess it was kind of like, kind of took the air from me, and I'd gasp for air and then black out, and I fell over my bow, and that's the only thing that kept me in the tree. And then so I figured they were out to get me then.
So you know, the research that has been done into this case suggests that what Mr. Shrum was exposed to was some type of asphyxiant, a substance that draws all the oxygen out of the air. And essentially, if you are exposed to an asphyxiant for a long period of time, you will die of suffocation. However, because, you know, he got it in short blasts, he would black out for a short period of time and then come to again. So, essentially throughout this encounter, this evening's encounter, which lasted approximately 12 hours, all night long, Mr. Shrum was repeatedly getting blasted by this vapor and knocked unconscious, throughout the night. So he decided that he was going to fight, and the only weapons that he had at his disposal was his bow. He had a very large wooden recurve bow that was capable of firing an arrow at a very high velocity, equal to a shot from a rifle. And he had three arrows remaining. So this is his description of what happens next.
So I had a 60-pound bow, which is a very high velocity, and I shot. Seeing how the robot's the only thing that was causing me harm, I shot the chest area, and it has the velocity of a rifle at that distance, because I'm only about 7-8 feet from him. And it, when I hit the chest, the sparks would fly like electrical, like an arc welder kind of. And then that robot backed up and almost knocked him down. He kind of fell back against the rock. And the two at the bottom took off and headed for the brush and stood out there about 30 feet from me. And then I shot two more arrows, and it was about the same time sequence that these two humanoids would, every time I'd shoot, they'd go back up into the brush, just almost out of sight from me.
Mr. Shrum, once again, the only weapon he had at his disposal was the bow and arrows. He used the three arrows. It had some effect on the creature, but it didn't have much. It would cause him to stumble backward a little bit. I think you can tell from listening to the witness that he's a very down-to-earth, no-nonsense sort of guy. In fact, people that we've talked to who know him say that he's a man of few words. You know, he doesn't, prior to his experience, he really wasn't interested in UFOs. He had heard about them because they had been in the news quite a bit in the early 1960s. But he was not one who sought publicity of any kind or really wanted to get involved in anything like this. In fact, his name was, although he gave eyewitness testimony and it was released in the 1960s, not in great detail, but just his story was told in a general way. His name was never given in connection with what happened. He was always listed as an anonymous source. Once again, because of his connection as an employee of a government contractor, he didn't want that sort of publicity, which could impact his job. So until recently, Mr. Shrum now is in his late 70s. He's in very poor health. And he contacted my co-author, Ruben Uriarte, and asked if we would be interested in putting it in a book form, his story. He wants his story told. And this happens a lot in the field of UFO research. People who have an experience like this hold on to it and keep it within themselves, keep it within their immediate circle for many years. But then as it gets near the end of their lives and they're kind of reassessing things and thinking about, you know, what has happened in their lives and things that are unresolved, a lot of times, especially with people who have served in the military, in secret capacities, have seen things, they'll wait until near the end of their lives before disclosing. And so that's what has happened with Mr. Shrum. But the story gets even weirder. And by the way, here's Mr. Shrum, a picture that my co-author Ruben Uriarte took a few years back with the actual wooden recurve bow that he had with him on that night in that dark forest in Northern California. Mr. Shrum was now out of ammunition. He was out of weapons, and he had to think fast. Being an outdoorsman, a sportsman, with a lot of years of experience hunting, he was a quick thinker and was trying to find a way to survive, to hold these creatures at bay. And what came into his mind was to set things on fire and throw them down at them. Maybe he could start a fire down at the base of the tree. So he was wanting to do that.
Then I ran out of arrows, so I only had three left. And I thought, well, that's when pomade hair, is just, I mean, the cap I had on was just soaked with oil.
For your hair.
Yeah, from my hair, yeah, pomade. And I always carried all kinds of books of matches with me when I hunted. And so I lit that cap, and it just blazed up, and I dropped it down the base of the tree. And just in that instant, they moved back about 12, 15 feet. And I glanced over at the ship that was over the canyon, kind of almost level with me. And it was almost out of sight. It was just like a star. It moved that fast, just in that second. So then I got the idea that they're scared of fire. So I burned everything but my T-shirt and my jeans. And come to find out later on that it was 32 degrees out, and I was shaking and kind of overexposed for the weather. And I had a bunch of change, and I threw it down, and they all kind of gathered around it. Well, after I shot my or started burning stuff and throwing it down, and I even tied some of my shirt that I ripped up to a compass so I could try to hit some brush, because there wasn't nothing right underneath the tree. And then I caught a little pile of brush on fire. I figured that would bring the cavalry. But when I run out of stuff to burn, I headed for the top of the tree. And it was a pretty sparse tree. I could see down to the ground. And I broke off the top and threw it down, and anytime I throw down or shake the tree, these humanoids would back up.
Okay, so he's up here in this tree, and as you can probably, I mean, it's very clear that he's doing everything in his power to survive this ordeal. He is, he's using his wits, he's using his hunter instincts. The thing is, you know, this case has been referred to as Don Shrum's personal war of the worlds. He was locked in combat with these beings. It was very obvious that they were trying to get to him. In fact, in between knocking him out with this strange vapor, this asphyxiant, in between those attempts, the humanoid figures would attempt to climb the tree. And sometimes they'd get as close to where they were touching his feet. And then he would kick at them and shake the tree and do everything in his power to discourage them from climbing up higher. So he was doing everything in his power to survive this evening. And this went on for hours, as I previously mentioned. The creatures were trying to climb. And one interesting thing is that he heard sounds. He says he interpreted them as being signals between among the creatures, and also between the ship, which was hovering nearby, and these creatures. He heard sounds. It could have been mistaken for bird song, for owls, but what came to his mind was that these creatures were communicating with each other. And every time there would be these sounds, then the creatures would change their behavior. For example, there would be a sound, and then the humanoids would immediately attempt to climb the tree. And then there would be another sound, and the climbing would stop, and the robot would close in and dispel some more gas. So he got the distinct impression that the sounds he was hearing were not nature sounds, that they were communications going on. And what's interesting is he was very traumatized by this experience, as you can imagine, and he actually suffered the symptoms of post-traumatic stress syndrome afterward. he spent many years trying to recuperate from the experience that he underwent this evening, this particular evening. And whenever he was out in outdoors with his family camping or whatever, and he would hear certain sounds in the forest at night, it would bring it all back to him, and he would tense up and, you know, start hyperventilating and start behaving like a frightened individual. So this really, really impacted him for the rest of his life. By the way, what you're looking at on the screen is an actual drawing done by Mr. Shrum, the large picture on the right side of the screen. That's an actual drawing that Mr. Shrum did of himself up in the tree, the large mothership hovering nearby, the two humanoids here, and over here behind the rock, partially concealed by this rock, is this robot or robotic creature.
Drasko, it continues with the lecture here for a few more minutes. We're fading out here because it's kind of a recap, and this is radio, so we think you got the full flavor of his presentation, and it was something else. Unbelievable. You're listening to a direct broadcast from the Laredo UFO Conference here on Inception Radio.